Welcome to No Room for Phonies,
episode 96.
Our 2023 back to school episode with my friend and former principal.
Former colleague.
Colleague and, yeah, she wasn't my principal, Rita. And it's just two retired principals talking about going back to school.
Yeah, it's an excellent episode. Everybody will really enjoy it.
So listen up and get some tips for back to school.
Welcome to No Room for Phonies. It is all the beginning of September, so this is our back to school podcast. And I'm here with my very good friend of how many years, Rita?
Oh, dear. Well, I went to PM in 1988.
Wow.
So let's figure that 23, 33, 35 years.
Yes. And we went to Mexico together.
We did. Yes, we did.
As very young 20-somethings, right?
When we were young and single.
Single.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've known each other for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we are very much on similar wavelengths when it comes to what is important about education. So I thought it would be fun to have this little conversation. So I always start out with a big quote, and I know you will like this quote because it's by, the guy's name is Bob Proctor. No idea who he is, but he says, accountability is the glue that ties commitment to results.
I love it.
Isn't that the best? If I was a principal, I would have that up in my office.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, by the way.
Oh, you're very welcome. I think this is, I actually have thought about this conversation for a long time because I thought if I'm going to talk about education, you would be the person that I would, because we actually
we talk about education a lot.
When we talk almost every Friday,
yes,
when
yes,
we have breakfast together, yes, we talk about education.
We do.
So I wanted to just start by asking you, like, a memory that you have of being a teacher or a principal that just comes to mind that actually just kind of warms your heart.
You know, I would say I don't have those big memories, but I have lots of little ones. So times when the light bulb goes off for a student, you know, someone that you've been working with and, you know, you've tried to approach a particular topic or a skill in a variety of ways, and all of a sudden they get it. That feeling when you... You know, obviously you see their joy. Yeah. I mean, that is really what, obviously, what teaching is all about. So that certainly is a heartwarming moment. One moment from early on in my career, I don't know that whether I would say this was a heartwarming moment, but it certainly was an impactful moment. I was in my first 2 or 3 years of teaching, and I was at the school I was at, we did speeches in those years.
Yes.
And I had a group of, this family of children, there were three of them in the family. And one of them did his speech on escaping Cambodia.
Wow.
They were immigrants. And I don't think there was a dry eye in the house, but also for me, it was the understanding that they built and that child built in that speech of how important school was to them.
Yes.
And the freedom to be at school. And, you know, they were great students. They were the kind of students who just ate up everything that you did. But that really hit home for me in terms of an understanding of what school is for some kids.
Yes. Well, and I think you and I both have worked in, like, lower income. And, I mean, sometimes you feel like you're having a bigger impact in those environments,
mm-hmm,
where you're, you know, feeding kids and where school actually is their safe place.
Right, right.
Because home can be very disrupted and not stable and even dangerous at times,
mm-hmm,
right, for those kids.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I think we've lost, I mean, you and I have both been retired for a bit, but when we hear the stories, I think sometimes we've lost a little bit of the awesomeness of what it means to be in this, to have the privilege of education.
Well, yeah, I've often said that as a teacher, never underestimate your impact.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
Down the road.
Because sometimes, you know, you may say something to a child that sparks their interest in something, and all of a sudden, you know, they're going in a different direction. You know, you can also say things that that they might take to heart.
Well, we've said that thing where, you know, when you say something, even to your own children, when you say that nasty thing, then you pretty much have to say 100 good things to make up.
Right, for to counter that.
You know, to what you said.
Yeah. And so never underestimate the power of your words, the power of your actions, and the influence that you can have on a child.
Yes. And I mean, that's why I think the teaching is truly a profession, right? Because you have so much of an impact. I mean, we think of doctors and nurses as like a life-saving profession. But to me, I always felt that teaching was a life-saving profession as well.
Not because for sure.
Education is what changes the world, right?
Correct.
Completely.
And, you know, particularly, as you said, when you're in the lower income schools, where perhaps those children are coming from situations that are not ideal, education is the key to get them out of poverty.
Yes. And I remember like having conversations with, you know, bright young kids in those schools where I would say, oh, no, you can go to university. You can move outside of what you're, like what you're currently. I mean, I know that I did that as a kid. I grew up not very well off, and no one really in my family had ever gone to university or done anything past whatever. And I was encouraged by teachers that I was smart and capable and whatever. So that's why I did what I did.
Yeah.
So it makes a huge difference. Yeah. I was trying to think of my memory, and it is what you say, it's all these little things. But I think one of my favorite things that I did as a mostly as a principal was mentor new teachers who were actually interested in being mentored. Like, I can think of many that were like long-term occasionals or ended up new hires that, you know, we're so interested in talking and understanding about how to really do the job well.
You know, interestingly, I would say that that's probably one of my biggest pieces of advice to a new teacher is to find a mentor.
Yeah, and I know that, like, you know, that my friend Helen, that's why I'm still friends with her, but she was assigned to me by Ted Clark, who is, I'll say it right out loud, was one of my favorite principals, probably my favorite principal, mostly because he did hold people accountable. He wasn't, like, he had no issues with holding people accountable. But he set me up with a mentor. Mm-hmm. Like, you two are it.
And this was before it was sort of a formalized program in our board anyway.
Yeah. He just said, this is your mentor. And, you know, and he also gave her time to come into my class and see what I was doing and help me and give me advice. And I spent a lot of time with her, and then we became friends, whole thing, right? So so I'm going to ask you, what are three pieces of advice you would give a parent sending their kid to school?
Three pieces of advice, I would say. If you haven't already, make sure you read to your kids every day.
Yeah.
And once they can read to you. I would say communication is probably the biggest key to a child's success. As you know, in education, we say that there's the triad. So there's the student, there's the school, and there's the parents, the home. And a teacher has 20, 25, 30, 35 kids.
Right.
You as a parent have 2, 3, 4, whatever. So that, you know, sometimes as a teacher, life gets busy. And even though they've been meaning to call you or, you know, to maybe touch base, get on that phone and call the teacher. Keep communication open. I think that is probably my biggest piece of advice.
Yeah.
Remember that when kids come home with a story, they're coming home with part of the story. And so as a parent, talk to your child.
The joke that is like, I'll believe half of what they say about school if you believe half of what they say about home.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
It gets twisted.
And know that, speak to the teacher first. We as principals would get calls about a parent complaining about a situation or asking for more information. And meanwhile, we're not the ones who have the story or the information. So go to the person who has that information. And then if you need further support, of course, you can, call the principal. But as a parent, make sure that you are listening to your child, but also that you are seeking clarification. And I think too, as a parent, don't say disparaging things about the school and about the teacher. I know that there might be situations that aren't, again, not ideal, but those kinds of things you need to keep to yourself because...
Well, and there are disparaging things that happen in your own home that you don't really want.
Correct.
Like things don't go perfectly all the time.
Right. That's right.
You give the same grace that you give to yourself to the teacher who's...
Right. Your child's trying to maintain a relationship there with the teacher. And I just think it's prudent not to interfere in that way.
It's kind of like, when you have a co-parenting situation, it's the most ideal part of that is that you speak nicely about each other.
Right.
Whether you take the person down when the kids aren't around because they're doing something that's ridiculous, that's mm-hmm. one thing.
Correct.
But the kid themselves doesn't have to know all that stuff.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I gave three pieces.
No, I'm going to give the third one.
Okay.
I really think that sometimes we send our kids to school in ridiculous form. Like we aren't giving them the proper kinds of food. And we aren't, and I know that food is expensive right now. I'm not trying to say, but bad food is more expensive than good food in a lot of cases. And we don't put them to bed. We don't have bedtime routines. And we don't kind of do the kinds of things that parents are responsible for doing. So we send this wild-eyed, kid that's been eating candy and not sleeping and, out till all hours of the night. And then we send them off to school, and then the parent, the teacher calls and says, we've got some issues, and we are not willing to say, you know what? They were up too late last night. This was, and I actually appreciated, because I taught a lot of primary, right? Mm-hmm. I appreciated as a teacher when I got the note that said, bad night. Yep. I'm just giving you a heads up. If there's a problem, just give me a call because... Yep. Yep. It was a bad night. It was a rare parent that did that, I'm going to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would say that's my... Like when school time is school time, a regular bedtime, get some vegetables and fruit into them and a decent meal and some activity, outdoor play.
Well, you're basically just setting the stage. You are creating the environment for good learning.
Yeah.
In that child.
So, because you can't, and what you pack in that kid's lunch has an impact, right? Like, mm-hmm. when you open it up, and it's, Lunchables are not cheap, and they're not good food mm-hmm. either. Mm-hmm. So,
there are lots of economical ways to create balanced and nutritious lunches.
Yeah, and, involving your kid in their mm-hmm. eating mm-hmm. and teaching mm-hmm. them about good eating habits. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like providing your own routine for kids.
In many meetings with parents when we were discussing some challenges that a child might be having, quite often we would start with a basic question is, what's the sleep routine like?
Yeah.
Because we found, I don't have the research, I don't have the data numbers, but we found quite often that students that were having some difficulties with behavior at school weren't getting sufficient sleep.
And the other thing is, how does your child... one of the questions I used to ask all the time was, how does your child fall asleep?
Mm.
Do they fall asleep to a TV? Do right. fall asleep yeah. to and it started to be like iPads and those kinds mm-hmm, of things. Mm-hmm. Because if you are letting your kid fall asleep to that every night, there is no self-regulation involved mm-hmm. in letting your kid fall asleep to a screen.
That's an excellent point. Yeah.
Because a book, yes. You know, like I've encouraged young parents, let your kid look at a book. We used to laugh with our kids. We'd set a timer and the timer would go off and then they had to go to sleep, but they would read. Mm. That's fine. Like that was after we had read to them or whatever. But what's the bedtime routine like in your house?
It reminds me of a little story. My father used to say, he'd send us off to bed and he said he would listen. I was an avid reader as a child. He would listen for the book dropping on the floor, and then he knew that I had fallen asleep.
But isn't that make more sense than
for sure?
Like some kids have huge screen TVs in their bedrooms,
and we also know self-regulation is, I think, probably one of the most challenging yes. problems that exists yes. with students
for all yeah. adults.
Well, adults mm-hmm. too. Yes, I was going to add that too. Yeah.
Well, you and I visited a lot of classrooms, right? Mm-hmm. I just wondered, like, if when you think back to that, like, what are some things that you saw in a classroom that made you go, wow, there's some great learning happening in this room?
I would say, so you're talking about, like, things on the wall as well as what I observed.
What you see yes. happening.
Yeah, so I would say, obviously, the interaction with the teacher, small group instruction, listening yeah. to whatever it was that the teacher was working on, but also seeing what the other kids were doing while that was happening, right? And I particularly loved it when kids were independently learning too. Mm-hmm. So the teacher was working with this group and all of those kids knew exactly, all the other kids knew exactly what to do. And these were not kids who were all well behaved. Mm-hmm. They just knew. They had been well prepared with respect to, all right, when the teacher's working with this group, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And this is what they were doing. I loved to see celebrations of any sort on the walls of the classroom. So celebrating student work, reminders, just some self-help reminders that teachers would put up, and kids were engaged in that, and they would refer to that, to those reminders. One of the things that later on in my career that we worked on when we worked on those performance boards, but for the most part, what I really loved to see was that there had been some teaching of the expectations. Yes. So whether it be, you know, we had the tell me that it's done, tell me that it's good, right? Yeah. So these are the requirements. This is the criteria for success. I think that, you know, that's one of the things that I felt was missing for some time in education. And yeah. so when we worked on that and asking students those questions, so you're working on this particular writing activity, so, you know, what do you need to include? And they would be able to,
yeah,
you know, they'd be able to let you know what I have to include and, you know, what's going to make it a level 3 or whatever I was shooting for.
For me, sometimes I wanted to be able to see in the kids' faces that they were engaged in what they were learning.
For sure.
Like, you could really tell when you walked into a classroom that kids were like enthusiastically engaged and like focused on what they were specifically supposed to be working on.
You know, one of the things that we used to talk about, you know, in groups of either in a staff meeting or in groups of principals, we talked about, you know, when someone would ask the question, well, how do you know if kids are engaged? And someone would say, well, if they're having fun. No, that's not engagement necessarily. It could be part of the engagement,
yes.
but that's not a sign of engagement.
No.
Because there'd be kids who could be struggling with what they were working on, but boy, were they engaged.
Yeah. Because, you know, that, as you know, I have said this before, this was one of my beefs in the whole education system, that everybody is supposed to be happy and everybody's supposed to be having fun. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? That's not real life.
No.
In real life, we struggle. We take the good with the bad. We're not always happy with everything. But you know what? We persevere and we come out the other end better people with some skills that we didn't have before.
Getting back to life skills, right? It is a life skill.
But that used to drive me crazy. Well, if your staff's not happy, no, everybody's not happy all the time. That's not what I don't know whoever, well, it became a thing, right? Yeah, that everybody's just supposed to be happy. But I really hoped for my students that they would, and my teachers, that they would engage in reflection and critical thinking.
Again, I just had this conversation with my daughter the other day about being reflective in your everyday life. So not just your professional life, but every day, looking back on your day and what went well, what didn't go well, what could you do different next time, right?
Yeah. What choice would you make that's different?
Yeah, like to me, that, again, that's a life skill, right?
Right, and just going, okay, I snapped at somebody. You know, maybe I'll really circle back and apologize for snapping at that person. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, kind of closing that gap.
Yep, yeah.
I did that as a principal, as a teacher. I used to teach my kids to reflect on what they... I mean, I remember when I taught primary and we had centers, and they had their folders that they kept their stuff on. Every time they completed an activity, they did a reflection. Mm-hmm. Might have been coloring a little happy or sad or a medium face and then talking about how they felt. But, you know, at first everybody just colored the happy thing. But then as you talked about it and gave people the language for reflection, then they actually did start to reflect.
And in that same conversation with my daughter this week, we talked about mental health and how reflecting on whether it be that writing activity and how you found it, something very kind of concrete, when you get in the habit of that and then you begin reflecting on other things, it is extremely helpful, particularly when it comes to your mental health, right? Reflecting on how you handled a situation. Like, cause it's not just about your schoolwork, but as well as, you know, your relationships and how you've handled things.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's a life skill.
That is a really good topic, is mental health, because I feel like I know a lot of young people that are still in the profession, and I do find it quite an overwhelming and somewhat discouraging climate for someone who's really, you know, enthusiastic about teaching and really trying to do their best. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I struggle with what, you know, to kind of say. Because it's an overwhelm. I think that it's more overwhelming than... I mean, I remember what it was like for me when I stopped and had my kids and I was away for 4.5 years. And I came back and went, wow, things had really changed in that period of time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would agree.
But now, there's just so many things.
Well, I know this is... I'm starting my 10th year of retirement. So it has been, you know, sometime... I did work a little bit here and there, doing some supply work, but I haven't been in a school now for, I guess, 6 years. But I am in contact.
Yeah, talk to people, right?
People who are still teaching. And yeah, it is overwhelming. And as teachers, you know, yes, we have lots of skills. But when it comes to mental health, you know, your skills only go so far.
Yes.
And so, you know, this is why, of course, in the schools they have some, you know, different supports in place. But it is...
I mean, it's a societal issue that is not going to be solved within a school. And that's why, I mean, we were talking about this briefly before. Like, parents do have to take responsibility for the mental health of their children. So they can't send their children... In my opinion, you can't send your child to school with all these issues and expect that the school is going to solve those issues.
Correct.
So, you know, your child struggles with this, this, or the other thing. You have to take responsibility. And I you know, when you go back to that statement, accountability is the glue that ties commitment to results. I mean, that really says it all.
Well, like, that goes right back to... when you have your children.
Right.
Right from the very beginning. right? Because this is our job as parents is to raise these independent kids. You want them to be well adjusted. Of course, you want them to be happy. But this is what we are teaching them along the way.
Yes, and I do understand, because I mean I didn't have a situation where I had where we were both working in kind of high pressure jobs, and then had these kids, right? I was off, then Charles was off, so we always really did have somebody who was available to our kids. Mm-hmm. A parent, because we didn't have grandparents and things that were available, mm-hmm, so we just mm-hmm. made that choice to be available. But mm-hmm. I still think you have to figure it out. Like,
well, your kids have to be your priority.
You know, and I know that it's difficult at times and workplaces. And, like, if you are two teachers and you have kids, like, you've got to be there for the kids that you have mm-hmm. in school and the... Like, it's not an easy balance being a parent.
No, sure, it certainly isn't.
But, I don't know how to, I think it's very difficult now to, the system is so, I feel like the system is just antagonistic, right? Teachers are unhappy, parents are unhappy, there's this clash all the time with workload, and you know, it just seems like, which I never thought of when I was a new teacher.
Very different time.
Very different times. I mean, we worked
well, and teachers were held in higher esteem in those days, right?
Yeah,
it's different now.
And I wanted to say, you looking back, what did you find the most frustrating about working in the school system?
Oh my.
Not that we're going to end positively, of course.
A few things. I mean, I think two things primarily frustrated me. Parents who didn't take care of their kids, and staff, not just teaching, but staff who didn't do their job.
Yeah.
Those were the two most frustrating mm-hmm. things, because, you know, you would, as a manager of sorts. I mean, that's what a principal is. I mean, you're an instructional leader and all of that, but you're also a manager. You just expect people to come to work every day and do their job.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I would say that when I speak to young teachers and about that sort of thing, one of the things I'll say to them is, you know what, the most important thing that you need to do when you go to school is not worry about everything else. Worry about those 20 kids in your class. Mm-hmm. Do your job to your ultimate ability.
Yep, for sure.
And just let the rest. Yep. And when I got up in the morning, I got up in the morning for kids. And I, no matter what position I was in, principal, resource teacher, like all the different jobs that I did, mm-hmm. teacher. And so when I kept that focus in front of me, then everything that I did, and when I had to sit a teacher down and say, hey, you gotta, mm-hmm. yeah. it was for, it. The ultimate goal was to make things the best I could for kids. Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I struggle now, because I think kids get kind of lost in all this.
Yeah, like I said earlier, right, that that working with the student, the parent or the home and the school and the teacher, school principal, whomever, it doesn't work unless everyone's working together.
No.
And so if you have any weak links there, it makes it very difficult for the student.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes think that one of the issues became when they took principals out of the working group mm-hmm. with teachers, mm-hmm. right? And I do understand that it's management, and I don't know. I think since that kind of happened, that, you know, it's hard. It was harder to be a team. Like mm-hmm. it just set mm-hmm. up this, mm-hmm. you know, this kind of. But it's just become a lot more difficult. But on that hand, I think that we both were very, like, passionate educators, and I go back to those years when we were working closely together, because we were at like neighboring schools mm-hmm. with the same mm-hmm. kind of sort of clientele, yep. Yep. And we did a lot of really in-depth professional development.
It's a problem solving. Yeah. Is what it was, right? Like, because we had sort of what we call that problem of practice, whatever it was, and we were working together to solve that problem, whatever it was. And as I said earlier about mentors, you know, capitalizing on the expertise of your colleagues is so important, whether you be, doesn't matter what role you have in education, that really is so beneficial.
And wouldn't you say, like we've talked about this before, that this is why it is so important when you are hiring to know what it is, like our frustration about, you know, some of our colleagues that really didn't have the instructional knowledge that they really needed to do the job, which wasn't their fault, mm-hmm. but to maybe have some kind of different standards for the leadership that you have mm-hmm. in place. Mm-hmm. Because it's leading and managing are very different.
Correct.
Very different things.
A manager, here's a prescribed set of rules. This is how you manage.
Yes.
Leading is a totally different
ballgame. I mean, I'm a big fan of Seth Godin and his recent book, this song of, is called Song of Significance. And it basically says that we want, people generally in their hearts want to do something that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes when you're held, like when you're frustrated, it's because you're being told you can't do the things that really will make a difference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's happening in some of our service professions right now where mm-hmm. people are just don't know what to do because a lot of people would do certain things, but they're held back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And poor leadership, I think, is some of the issue.
Well, we were talking about this earlier, right? Why don't people want to go into leadership in education?
Yeah.
I think that's a significant question that senior management and boards really do need to look at.
Yeah, I do too. And I actually, you know, I was thinking one of the final questions that I have is, what do you think our responsibility is to support education, like now that we're no longer really working, but I feel very passionate about it, and not passionate like I want to be a trustee, but passionate like I want to not give up and still somehow influence what's happening.
Well, and I think it a lot of that can happen through conversations that you have with people.
Yeah,
I think there are some misconceptions when it comes to teaching and education, and I think, you know, dealing with those misconceptions to educate people for sure.
Right.
And still having a connection to people who are working in education, I think also is, I think it's important for us because then it gives us information again to educate other people. But it also, I think, you know, once a teacher, always a teacher, right?
Well, and I said, even for me, like when I talk to people who are parents who aren't teachers, it's so interesting to me, right? Because I was a teacher, he was a teacher, like a lot of the mm-hmm. people that I know that have kids are teachers. But then you meet these people who are not teachers at all, and mm-hmm. they're like, what is going on? I don't even, and to just kind of say, you can go and talk to the teacher.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah, and like sometimes people sometimes it's as simple as making them understand that, well, okay, so here's, there might be a decision that was made, let's say, by the teacher, by the principal, by the school, whomever. And quite often, you know, parents might have a bit of a tunnel vision because they're thinking about their child and how it affected them. Well, here's the bigger picture.
Yes.
And sometimes it just, you know, those kinds of conversations go a long way in building some understanding.
Yes. And I do think that maybe some of us who are retired that kind of have a different view of things should be more like vocal when it comes to government, that we should be writing. And like I've often
you're good at that
thought that I should be sending like, whoa guys, you're and you know, we've had this conversation about teacher evaluations where they should be bringing in, we know what it felt like to have to evaluate teachers and then other teachers get upset because someone's being, you know, supposed like, because the sense is that that poor person, whatever, and there's the circling of the wagons and all that, where if someone else was coming in to do some of that evaluation process, mm-hmm. it would make the school run smoother. Mm-hmm. Like there are mm-hmm. so many just little tweaks that could be made mm-hmm. within the system mm-hmm. that would just, and yet I just.
Well, it's about accountability, right?
Yeah.
Going back to that.
When I saw that, I was looking mm-hmm. last night for some little quote. And when I read that, like accountability is the glue that ties commitment to results. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought that actually summarized a lot of the way that we led as principals, mm-hmm. both of us, mm-hmm. because we really did to their best of our ability try to hold kids, parents, and teachers, and not just teachers, but other staff mm-hmm. accountable for yep. what they... So maybe you and I should just write a book about accountability.
Yeah. And again, you know, getting back to it, that's a life lesson, because it doesn't matter where you go in this life, what you do for a living, you're going to be accountable to someone.
Yes.
You're going to be accountable to the police officer if you were yeah. speeding. You're going to be accountable to your boss if you're late.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, accountability in every yeah. walk of life.
And the way that you actually get results through accountability is by learning to be a critical, self-reflective thinker. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's at. So there we go. We've solved, again, we've solved all the problems.
Every Friday and today too.
So thank you for coming and for sharing your ideas. I actually have, ever since I started this podcast, I've wanted to have you on it. So you have fulfilled a dream.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for No Room for Phonies. We'll be back on September 30th with just Charles and I talking about back to school. We might even get some college back to school ideas.
Ideas, for sure.
Good.
All right.
All right, so see you on the 30th for our follow-up to the back to school.
Good night.